88.3 Southern FM.
Where you are listening to The Space Show. Now, we heard about things falling from the sky in that last segment. And most people, if you mention the word Skylab, they think of things falling from the sky. And Skylab crashed onto our home planet. In fact, it crashed right here in Australia. And, well, it wasn't meant to do that. And most people forget that, in fact, Skylab 1 was the space station, and there were three missions that took three astronauts each mission up to the space station. Skylab 2 had three people that went up for 28 days, and then we had Skylab 3. And an event happened 50 years ago last week. And that was that a song written by Chuck Morley was played on 1973, August the 26th, to the crew aboard Skylab. And the capsule communicator at the time was Carl Heneys. And we're going to see if we can take a listen in now to what happened 50 years ago last week.
So Skylab Control, 1100 Greenwich Mean Time. Skylab Space Station now on Revolution 1513, just off the southern tip of the continent of Africa. 9 minutes to Hawaii. Spacecraft communicator Carl Heneys. The wake-up call to the crew over the bus at tracking ship Vanguard minutes ago. At this time, we will play back that tape.
Skylab, this is Houston through Vanguard. Good morning, gentlemen. This morning, we have some music for you to wake up by.
The window at the oceans far below, watching them turning seemingly slow. Alarm sounds within, work shift begins. It's time to go outside and start up again in my Skylab home. In my Skylab home. In my Skylab home. Ever orbiting peaceful over Earth. Floating out the airlock on my way to ATM, replace all the film, then go back inside again. Houston goes by, winking her eye. Here comes old soul, gonna light up the sky of my Skylab home. Of my Skylab home. Of my Skylab home. Ever orbiting peaceful over Earth. Why am I out here? Probe nature's secrets to help our Earth grow. keep on searching from my outpost in the sky, solving those problems so our planet won't die. Finding a place on the threshold of space, sailing the skies for the whole human race in my Skylab home. In my Skylab home, in my Skylab home, ever orbiting peaceful over.
Good morning. Thought you guys might like to know how popular you are down here.
Who's the writer?
That was written and played by Charles Morley of Cocoa Beach, and I got a tape of it through Bill Cummins of Titusville radio station WRMF.
Oh, very nice. Our best regards to him. I think it's quite a pleasant tune, and Jack just said pretty doggone accurate.
Yeah, it sounded like a pretty good tune to me. In case you didn't get the title of that, that was my Skylab home, and we've got about 30 seconds to LOS. We'll see you again in about 1 hour. Exact time coming up is 11:49 over Hawaii.
And that happened 50 years ago, last week, on August the 26th, 1973. A good friend of the Space Show and of the Space Association is Joe Kerwin. Now, Joe was one of the three astronauts on the Skylab 2 mission. That's the first manned mission of the Skylab program. And he had a chat with Peter Arwood, the late Peter Arwood, his last conversation for the Space Show. And they spoke about the genesis of the Skylab program.
By the way, I will just mention here that that the NASA Marshall Space Flight Center was already pressing on with a plan to build Skylab. And in between these other things, a couple of us were getting to go there maybe three or four times a month to participate in the design process and to do some training. So I began to get into Skylab on a part-time basis that early, and that was priceless.
And Joe went on to tell us that he had been quite instrumental in developing the Skylab program and worked on the mock-up, involved in deciding on the food. Remember, he was a medical doctor.
Fair. All right, Joe, we'll head back to you and what was happening in your world. And this thing called Skylab was in the horizon, and you were a part of it.
Yeah, I finished off the TAPCOM duty and went right back now to pretty much full time work on Skylab. A typical day would be that P.J. Weitz and I would get a T-38 early in the morning, take off from Ellington Field in Houston, point the nose to 81 degrees, as I recall, and get up to 17,500 feet just under the controlled airspace, and then pour the coal to it and arrive in Huntsville at in about 58 minutes.
Wow.
Wow. That we could get on with a day of either meetings, some decision meetings on systems, or some of these fun early times when we'd go over to their working building and they had a big 20-foot diameter circle of chalk on the floor and the divisions, and they were working on, you know, where the different pieces of hardware were going to be. And we would chime in when we had an idea. One idea that they didn't want to accommodate was to put a window on it. and we had to work really hard and get some high-level help before they would agree to break into the upper stage and put a great big one-meter window.
Oh, wow.
I'll tell you, we would have died without it. it was our window on the world.
Indeed.
260 miles up. And we did a lot of work in the WIF, the water immersion facility, which was a lovely big water tank that some engineers made out of some booster parts that they found scattered around and made into a great big circular tank, got it all outfitted. And then, only then, did they invite von Braun to help come and have a look, because it's slightly illegal to build a building, if this was a building, without going through all the headquarters muck and muck that takes 3 or 4 years. And he went and he looked it all over, and he looked at the water, and he looked at it, and he says, "I want to get in there." And then they had one. And so it was a good water facility. It was big enough to hold a mock-up of the entire Skylab. And we spent many hours in there practicing things like recovering the film from the canisters on the Apollo telescope mount. We had all these wonderful sun telescopes and cameras. That was the big reason for our having spacesuits and a little airlock on Skylab. There was no planned maintenance of Skylab. They didn't do any on Apollo, and it was considered unsafe. Well, it got safer in a hurry. But we got pretty expert in the suit and launched many hours. We often did two or three hour sessions in a day. And when we did that, we had to stay overnight to let the nitrogen wash out of our blood so we wouldn't get bends in the T-38 on the way home. But it was good. And we also got involved back in Houston with talking to the experimenters as well as the engineers on the different systems and getting our 2 cents worth in on things like the food system. The principal investigator of the food system was a guy who knew how to do bed rest studies and did them in a very controlled way. And everybody ate the same diet all the way through the test, before the test and after the test. So he wanted us to do that. And he knew that you burn about 300 calories a day less in weightlessness than you do in 1G. Because you're not moving those big muscles as much. Unfortunately, what he knew happened to be wrong. and in addition, he wanted everybody to have the same number of calories per day. Jack Lausma, 230 pounds athlete, 3,400 calories a day. And Alan Bean, a very smart guy, but kind of scrawny. He was like a 1,900 calorie guy. So we complained to Deke and said they can't do that. Deke wrote a lovely memo saying we were raising astronauts, not stuffed geese. You've got to fix this and let them eat what they need. Finally, they let us sit down at a table and eat Skylab food for a week until everybody had an accurate calories per day mark, and then they built that much food into our systems. They were very strict. Any food you did not eat or only partially ate, you had to weigh the can to make sure that they knew how much of the food wasn't eaten. So we got together and said, we know we've got a little weight thing here, but the heck with it. Let's make a resolution that if we open a can, we eat it all. And we all said, yes, we'll do that. And it was easy because the diets that we were given still had this 300 calories subtracted from them. This supposed lack of need on space. So to get to the results, the first crew, us, lost an average of about 8 pounds. The second crew, who exercised more and got to eat more of the so-called empty calories, candy and cookies, the cookies were good, they lost a little less than that. And then the third crew finally made the breakthrough where they added back the 300 calories. And And one of them, it was Bill, no, it wasn't Bill Pogue, it was Jerry Carr, the Marine, actually gained a pound in 84 days on Skylab. So over the three missions, we finally got that taken care of. Let's see, we had the vestibular experiment, the motion sickness experiment, which was one of the least popular experiments you can imagine. You got into a rotating chair and you rotated up to whatever your RPM had been defined to be on these on 1G tests, which were particularly unpleasant. What you did was you got in, let's say 7 RPM or 10 RPM, and then you did head motions in all three axes like that for as long as you could until you got nauseated. And then you got to stop. But there were some occasions when the nausea was followed by the vomiting. And so we traveled to Pensacola, where the PI was, and he was a wonderful guy, and just told him what the problem was and asked for two things. Let's back off from nausea to just awareness that things aren't going right until we stopped, and then exempt the commander on the first mission just in case we need to fly back in a hurry. We want Pete Conrad to not be thrown up. And he said, absolutely, and you can borrow my car. He's a really good guy.
Yeah. Well, of course, the last three missions that were planned up to 20 were killed off, so that made the seat shuffle a bit more brutal, I suppose.
Well, the cancellation of those last three Apollo flights, again, had a excellent side effect for Skylab, because the original plan had been to launch Skylab on a Saturn I rocket, which is a two-stage rocket. So you had to use the stage to get into orbit. Then they would empty out the liquid hydrogen, and we, the crew, would spend the entire first mission putting things in place. And
oh my
where they'd come from, nope, they hadn't even planned on that, you know. It was a terrible system. And when we got a Saturn V, it just changed the complexion of the whole program, because we got to build it carefully, test it on the ground, and then launch it all in one piece.
The Space Association's Peter Aylward with a chat with Joe Kerwin, recorded for the Space Show and for the Space Association.